You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Nolan knows her knowledge is your power.
Happy Thursday, Wendy. How are you doing?
I thought you said happy birthday for a moment. I'm just fine. Thanks for the bohile.
I am good. I am.
So the closest to any notable day, I suppose, for me was yesterday's World Consumer Rights Day.
Yes.
We're a day late.
So should we be saying Happy World Consumer Rights Day for yesterday?
In the same way that you say Happy Women's Day, I suppose, it's just like a day where you stop and you make a few speeches and things, and then everything carries on the same.
So let me ask
Sorry,
this, because on this show we talk often about 99% of the time we're covering the problems as consumers and we try to resolve them. What can we be happy about as consumers in this country?
I suppose we have freedom of speech. We can speak out. We can voice our issues with companies on social media. And as long as it's absolutely true what we're saying and in the public interest, we can't be accused of defamation and dragged through any legal process. But of course, if it's not true, the opposite applies. We do have some very fine consumer protection laws in this country. The legislators cherry-picked from the best in the world when they came up with the Consumer Protection Act, which we've had in force since April 2011. Enforcement could be a lot better, but at least people like myself and others in the media can say to service providers when they don't comply with the CPA, we can out them and say, you're actually acting illegally. So I'm very grateful for that. And we keep on keeping on. My biggest goal is for people to empower themselves with information, to know their rights and use them to good effect, not to get caught by any scams, not to just go shopping online and look for the lowest price and think, oh, that's fantastic, I like the photo of that, without doing any checks, and then the stuff doesn't arrive, which is complaints I get every single day. That's the aim. That's what we do these things, is for to tell a story of something that went wrong and then say, actually, this is what you're entitled to, and this is these are the questions you must ask so that you don't get caught in the same way. And that's really what it's all about. World Consumer Rights Day, let's know our rights and let's use them. And I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
And we will use them, definitely. All right, so let's jump into Salim's story. Wendy, share with us just a recap of his story before we pick up, because we have been waiting with bated breath for feedback as to how the story is going to end.
And it ended well, I'm happy to say, but I've given the punchline away. But so we had already planned for us to chat about issues around these offer to purchases, OTPs, that we sign if we want to buy a car. Because lots of things can go wrong either way. The dealer pulls out, the customer pulls out. What are your rights? What can the dealership do to you or not do to you? And I happened to, on the morning a week ago, on Thursday morning, I had another case study which we dealt with around Don's situation and that 200,000 rand deposit he put on the Porsche, you'll remember. But so that morning, while that prep was underway, I got this email from Salim, of Randburg, and he had emailed to say that he'd put a deposit down on a car, he'd signed off to purchase, he'd done everything that was asked for him, and when it came down to it, the car was sold to somebody else. And we didn't name the dealership because I had just got the email and I didn't have time to investigate and give companies the right to reply, which is what we do. But I've since done that, so we can name the dealership. It's CMH Ford in Randburg. Salim saw the vehicle that he wanted, which was a 2013 long wheelbase Ford Tourneo, which is a people mover, a van. It was very low mileage for its age. It was advertised on the Auto Trader, Auto Trader on the 12th of Feb, and he viewed it the very next day at the dealership. He agreed to buy it for his catering and eventing business. And then he got involved in all the usual admin. He was asked by the salesman to submit his ID, proof of residence, you know the drill. Finance was being arranged. He got a quote from the dealership to add accessories to the vehicle, and they were doing trade-in arrangements for his car. on the 16th of February, he signed the offer to purchase, and he emailed it to his banker as well as to the salesman at the dealership, who then asked him to pay what he called a little deposit on the car. Salim suggested 5,000 rand. Salesman said, cool. Money was paid. And then the wheels fell off. And I'm hoping we have Salim with us to pick up with the story from there.
Yes, we do. Salim, how are you doing?
I'm great. And yourself?
Good, good.
So you're sounding loud, coming across loud and clear. No load shedding in your area, obviously, Salim, at the moment.
It's just ended at 2 o'clock. Thank God.
Oh, good. Right. Well, let us know. You think this car is yours. You've done all the necessary. You've signed the agreement. You've paid your deposit. And when did you realize things were not going to end up as you'd envisaged?
Okay. So, all right, let me think. So, what happened? I was in constant communication with the salesman, and he said to me, you have to have your financials here by Saturday the 25th. We actually opted then to go for cash. And when I called him on Saturday morning the 25th, I could not get hold of the salesman on his mobile. So I eventually called the office, and I can't remember who I dealt with. I didn't get his name. And the guy just said to me the vehicle was sold for cash yesterday. And I mentioned he got an OTP and a deposit, and he just said to me, trail it for 48 hours, and that was it. So,
okay, let me stop you there. He said that your deposit was only holding the vehicle for you, despite the fact that you had this offer to purchase, for 48 hours, and now you were past the 48 hours. So pretty much sorry for you. Was that it? Okay, and the important thing is, did the salesman ever tell you verbally, in writing, WhatsApp, email, anything, that please understand that this is only valid for 48 hours? Because I certainly didn't see that in the correspondence.
No, definitely not. Nothing of the sort. And just to add, I subsequently found out that the OTP is actually valid for 14 days, which is maybe the 2nd of March, because we only signed it on the 16th. So we're well within our time frame.
Okay, so sorry, they said they applied the 48-hour thing to the deposit. They said your deposit was only valid, but it doesn't really make any sense, because the agreement that's binding on both parties is the offer to purchase. The deposit is a side issue, right? Okay, so you had 14 days and you were well within that. Okay, so Salim, you brought the case to me exactly a week ago, by which you said you hadn't been able to engage, you'd been trying to engage, no apology, no explanation, and certainly no refund of your 5,000 Rand. I checked in with you earlier this week, it was the same story, right?
Yep.
Okay, so I was going to pick up the story, if you wouldn't mind just holding a bit, Salim, so then we'll come to you for your reaction and just a little bit. So I took up the story, as I promised, after the show. I sent the dealership CMH Ford Randburg a media query, and I copied it to Manish Bagaloo, who is the Director of Communications with Ford Motor Company of South Africa. I'm happy to report that things got moving rather quickly after that. The wheels got turning. And I got a response yesterday from Manish of Ford South Africa. He began by saying, treating customers like family is a guiding principle for our business. We place a special emphasis on both customer care and interaction. We were very surprised to hear of the incident with Salim. Upon receiving your email, we immediately started our investigation into the complaint. In essence, this was an oversight by the CMH Randburg dealership, both in terms of the signed OTP not being honored, as well as the delayed refund. I wonder how long it would have been delayed. Remember, it was paid in mid-February.
Yes.
Delayed refund of the deposit to the customer. We've since revisited procedural requirements with the dealership to ensure that this type of incident does not happen again. We emphasize the repercussions of such oversights to the dealership, both internally and externally. We also completely understand the customer's frustration and can confirm that since your query, the following actions have been taken with Salim to satisfy his needs. Number one, the dealer principal, also referred to as the DP, met with him on behalf of the dealership, apologized for the tremendous inconvenience caused, and has ensured that his deposit refund has been affected and is reflecting in his bank account. Number two, the DP discussed alternatives in terms of Salim's vehicle needs for his business. A 2019 Ranger was identified, which he test drove yesterday, as a possible purchase. We've ensured that the structure and pricing of the new deal is similar to the in cost to the previous deal that's on the Tony event, and thus ensuring he's not left out of pocket. And this includes aspects of the trade-in that was initially proposed with the dealer, which the dealer is now factoring into the new agreement. We regret that a customer faced this issue, and we've apologized to Salim for the experience he received. We will be monitoring the next steps, and we hope to welcome Salim into the Ford family soon. Okay, so I think it's fair to say that there was quite a rapid change in approach.
Definitely.
From the time we took up the case. Salim, you were listening to all of that. I believe that the meeting between you and the dealer principal happened not at the dealership, but in fact he came to you. You had this conversation in your home.
Yes, at my place.
Okay, what did that surprise you?
Well, look, it was great.
Salim, did you make tea is the question, or did you just say sit down with no water?
Honestly, he was most welcome to come in. We are not those. we offered him tea, and I'm sure he's listening. He did not want tea. He did not want watermelon.
Did you make him stand?
No. I put him down on a comfy seat.
Sounds like everybody was gracious at this point.
No, my wife wasn't. But anyway, she did calm down eventually. She actually stay out of this.
Okay. Interesting. You obviously got an apology and all of that. Did you get an explanation as to how the car was sold to somebody else? Why, when you had this agreement, which was still valid, as you say, for 2 weeks, and you'd paid the deposit, and how you'd been trying to engage and find out what went wrong, and also to get your money back, 5,000 Rand, which they'd had for weeks. Did you ever get anything approaching an explanation around that?
Well, look, I must be quite honest. I did question the dealer principal, his name Pierre, and I think it was a process on their side. I didn't get the full lowdown of it, but somebody, I don't know who and what happened, but somebody, I don't know, somebody just did whatever they wanted to and got away with it, basically. You know, there was no real explanation of how it happened, but it's now done and dusted, you know. That's the way
it's
I
done.
See it.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
and
done.
And are you taking that Ranger that was offered to you?
I must be honest, we drove it, but it just didn't have the X factor. So I mentioned to Pierre this morning, he should continue looking for something else. You know, when you see something and you like it, and you see something you're not too happy with. So the car was perfect.
Yeah, don't settle. Yes.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like they're going to make sure you get a good deal after what happened to you, which is music to my ears. And
I'm sure they will.
And I look forward to hearing what it is. And I'm happy we were able to turn the situation around for you.
Thank you so much, Salim. So, Wendy, I mean, what did you learn that is new from this whole situation?
I can't say I learned anything new, to be honest. I've had these situations before.
Yes.
And after my involvement, I got people. There's one guy in particular, I remember, it was he did the same thing in Durban, a Durban dealership. And again, you know, a substantial dealership, not a small independent.
Mm.
And I negotiated for same thing, just sold it to somebody else, had the OTP and everything. And I said to the dealership very strongly that they should put him, it was a Polo, mm-hmm. that they should put him in, find a car. It was a good deal, but find another one that's as close as possible that he's happy with for the same amount.
Mm.
You can't just walk away from the OTP. You can't do that. And they did. And the chap was absolutely delighted. And it's nice to get involved. So I know about the OTP problems. I know that both, it's binding on both parties, but both dealerships and consumers often just change their minds, decide on something else, decide not to stick to the agreement, and think that, you know, they can get off scot-free. And according to the agreement, they can't. It just depends what the other party decides to do about it. So I know that this is a pain point. And I think a lot of it on the consumer side boils down to, and this didn't apply to Salim, obviously, but I'm talking about the flip side when the customer changes their mind. They kind of think it's some form of quote and that they can just change their minds, and they learn quite quickly that actually that's not the case. Also, what did I learn? I didn't learn it, but it was also reinforced the understanding that media does have a role to play in these cases. There's also the motor industry, Ombud, of course, which would no doubt have come, you know, said to the dealership, you need to sort this out and quickly, that you can't disregard the offer to purchase agreement. But yes, it is very satisfying to be able to take up a valid case and see it resolved, you know, within a very short space of time.
So on that note then, and I know we'll probably continue with this if need be into Eyewitness News headlines, we're speaking about this offer to purchase, this OTP, and the common misunderstanding. So, of course, Wendy, as usual, you've brought someone along who can give us the necessary information that we need.
Absolutely. It's the Motor Industry Ombudsman of South Africa himself, Johan van Vreeden, and he's been in that position for the past 23 years, from 2000, so I've dealt with him and for all of my years in consumer journalism, and he's agreed to join us today to chat about this issue specifically. I mean, buying a car is an extremely broad issue, so we're not going to try and cover everything, but given the topic of this week's show and last week, I thought let's get him in to talk about what goes wrong with offer to purchase agreements on both sides, and give us some advice for consumers, since this is a consumer show, about what you really should know and understand and get answers to before you sign. And, you know, it's a very big step that you're making with huge financial implications potentially, and it's not something to be done lightly. So, Johan, are you with us?
Hi, Johan. How are you doing?
Hi, fine. And yourself?
Good. Yes.
Hello, Jan. Thanks for joining us. I know you have a lot of demands on your time. Am I right in guessing that your office handles a lot of these OTP disputes when one or the other party decides they don't want to be bound by it and the other side is not happy about it?
Yes, I think by now I'll be able to write a book about it. But anyway, be that as it may, the OTP is a very important document for both the dealership and for the consumer. And the consumer must make absolutely sure that he understands the terms and conditions in that OTP. And we have found that these OTPs differ from dealership to dealership, from dealer group to dealer group, and so on, you know. And a lot of people put in things that shouldn't be in there, you know. For instance, you know, if you look at Section 51 of the Act, prohibited transactions, agreements, terms, or conditions, you know, a dealer is not supposed to put in anything that defeats the purpose and the policies of the Act, mislead or deceive the consumer, or subject the consumer to fraudulent conduct directly or indirectly, waive or deprive the consumer of a right in terms of this Act. You know, I can go on and on and on. There's a whole list of these things.
So,
and there's a couple of sections that's got to be read together. But basically, when you, what it comes down to is fairness. Absolute, just fairness.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to treat your consumer with fairness. And you must limit in any way the risk or liability of the supplier or any other person for that matter, and constitute an assumption of risk or liability by the consumer. Now, the problem that we face is, sorry.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you're talking about an unfair term that would be snuck in there, I've seen a few. The one that comes to my mind would be words that seek to make it a foot's deal. In other words, you knowingly buy this car and you agree that you're not any defects that happen are not our responsibility, which of course is a complete contravention of the Consumer Protection Act. Yes. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So to look out for that sort of thing, but they can't contract out of the law. Even if someone did sign an OTP with that in it, they would have recourse to come to you and say if something went wrong and the dealer said, okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, there are case law as well in this particular instance. We had an interesting case the other day where the vehicle was sold as scrap. Now,
I can't do that.
The vehicle drove the vehicle away. Now, how can you drive scrap away? Now, we have resolved that case, you know, by having the vehicle returned and the money refunded. But the fact remains is that this is the type of thing that happens. But what can, you know, the Act provides for a 6 months warranty period anyway. However, If the dealer specifically say, listen, you know what, this vehicle is fine. However, there is a bit of, especially with your used vehicles, there is wear and tear on, say, for instance, a component like the alternator. And we cannot warrant that this alternator is going to last the 6 months. So sign here that you accept the vehicle as is. Then, of course,
that
doesn't apply. Then it's fine.
Okay.
You know, then the consumer accepts that if the alternator should fail during that first 6 months, then, of course, you know, he's responsible for that himself. And he cannot take the vehicle back to the dealer and say, I want a replacement alternator. However, if the dealer doesn't say that, and these any component fails during that first 6 months, the consumer has got full recourse, as you know, money back, repair of the vehicle.
Repair, yeah.
So okay. let's take a quick break here, Wendy, and just pause. Oh, Johan, we are going to keep you as well, just in case there are any questions, because I see the phones are going crazy, and I hope Johan has some time for us, but we are late for Eyewitness News headlines.
702. Nola knows her knowledge is your power.
We're taking your calls on 011-883-0702 and the WhatsApp line 0727021702. We are with Wendy Noda. We're going to open up the lines, but we also have with us Johan van Vreeden, Motor Industry Ombudsman, who has been sharing some of the interesting challenges that they've been facing around offers to purchase. Sorry, Johan, every time I look at our scripts here and I'm seeing OTP, I keep thinking one-time PIN.
One-time password.
So I'm like, offer to purchase. So I don't know.
They're both dangerous.
Yes. I don't know, Wendy, before we jump to the lines, was there anything else that we wanted to ask Johan?
Of course, you know me. I only got one question out before the news. Johan, thank you for staying with us. So somebody who, I'm not going to ask you to comment on Salim's case because I didn't run it by you, but in the case of someone who assigned an OTP, paid a deposit and then told, it's been sold or just it's been sold, go away. What rights, what recourse do they have given that it is a legally binding document? What should they do?
Okay, let me put Johan back. Shem, I think maybe he was on hold a little bit too long, so we will get that question to Johan. But in the meantime, the lines are open. Let's quickly hear, because some people have been listening to these stories and find themselves in similar situations. Ricky in Santon, how are you? Oh, and we just lost Ricky. Okay, so in my mind, Wendy, just in terms of the general, okay, we've got Johan back. Hi, Johan.
Yes, look, the thing is, it's clearly illegal. And, you know, just to enforce or to confirm my statement earlier on, if you look at Section 49 of the Act, one of the things that is very, very clear, that in paragraph 3, the provision and condition or the notice contemplated in subsection 1 must be written in plain language as described in section 22. The fact, the nature and effect of the provision or the notice contemplated in the subsection must be drawn to the attention of the consumer in a conspicuous manner. In other words, you know, every detail has got to be in there and is likely to attract the attention of an ordinary alert consumer. Now, you have to read this. There's a lot more in there, but you have to read this with Section 55.6. And that is very clearly, it says that, in this subsection, that the consumer has been expressly informed that particular goods were offered in a specific condition and has expressly agreed to accept the goods in that condition or knowingly acted in a manner consistent with accepting the goods in that condition. In other words, you know, the thing is that once the two parties came to an agreement that alternator might fail, and the customer is made aware of that and so on, then, of course, the dealer has basically covered himself in that particular instance as far as that component goes. But what happens now is, most vehicles consist of between 3,500 and 4,000 components. They say, you know what, this vehicle I'm reselling to you, but it's a second-hand vehicle and it's wear and tear, and anything can go wrong. So what they are actually saying is that, you know, all 4,000 components might go wrong, and therefore you are exonerating us from from our obligation, and that's nonsense. You can't do that.
It is, and a lot of them do it. But in the case of someone, let's assume the car is fine, or they haven't got to the point where they've discovered any issues. They just know they want the car. They sign the offer to purchase, and the car gets sold to someone else. What then should they? Would you advise them to do, because that was a legally binding document that the dealership chose to unilaterally disregard? Yeah.
Now, the important word you used was a legally binding document. You know, they can immediately contact my office and we can deal with it more or less in the same fashion you did. And congratulations with your outcome. Sometimes it's not as easy as that.
I know. Yeah, but anyway, okay, and one last thing. Thank you. One last thing before we let the listeners have a go is something I haven't mentioned, and it occurred to me only today, and that is a lot of people do the negotiation around the deal over email, right? Sending documents backwards and forwards. And I was thinking if I wanted to buy a car and somebody sent me the offer to purchase document via email, I would say, please sign it first. Because if it's blank, then I sign it and I send it back. How do I know they're going to sign it too and make it a legally binding document? So would you advise people to say to the dealership, I want to sign it, yes, but please you sign it first so that I can see both our signatures on there before I send it back. Okay.
That's very good advice. Yes. So, but you know, both parties must understand that it is a legally bounding document. And in the case of the consumer that contacted you, the consumer said that at no point was he informed that his deposit was a time limit deposit. And nowhere in the OTP does it say that. So in that case, it's a clear cut case that the dealer took a chance. And he must also, another piece of advice that I'd like to give is that consumers must make sure that it is a senior person that signs the OTP from the
dealer. Oh, yes.
The salesman can't sign that. It's got to be signed by either the sales manager or the dealer principal.
Very good advice. Thank you.
The salesman must make sure that either the dealer principal or the sales manager signs the document. Salesmen don't have the authority to sign an OTP.
This is such amazing advice, Johan, especially what you're saying about who is the person that is signing. And this is very empowering. But what I want to do, before we run out of time, we've got so many calls. If you don't mind, Johan and Wendy, let's quickly jump to Ricky in Sandton. Ricky, go ahead.
Hi. It's Ricky here. Just to be quick with this, I just recently bought a car last month, and on the first day, everything was in a hurry because I was at work. I didn't even get to test drive the car. I just got to trust the salesperson, signed the document, got the car, and as soon as I got home, the car has a funny sound on the lift. And when I got out to actually inspect the car properly, only to find out the car was in an accident. Now, when I call the dealer and try to talk about it, I was told, hey, I'm not a professional to know what's new and what's not. And I'm like, you know what, with the way you're treating me, I'd like to call the DO. And they were like, no, forget it. So I don't know.
Ricky, when you say you signed for it, are you talking as in you are buying the car?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, and there was no disclosure about an accident, obviously.
No. Actually, now when I look at the price of the car was 135. Now the price is 187, of course, after the installments, after the terms that have been paid. But then now I'm being sold a car with the impression that it has never been in an accident, only to find out that the car is in an accident. Well, I can't tell for a fact, but I don't even know where to go. It's just that I'm not happy with the car. It has funny sound, and I'm just not happy at all. I just wanted to cut the deal off.
Johan, what recourse is available for Ricky in that situation? He suspects, but it has not yet been confirmed.
Well, look, the vehicle is still within his 6 months warranty period. where he's got the three choices. Either the vehicle is repaired, his money is returned, or the vehicle is replaced. But then on the other hand, what worries me about this was everything was done in a hurry.
Mm.
And, you know, and the Act quite says that it's quite clearly says that it's likely to attract the attention of the only alert consumer, having regard to the circumstances before the earlier of the time at which the consumer enters into the transaction and agreement. You know, when you buy a car, you must understand that it's most probably the second, and these days almost the most expensive investment you're going to make for the average guy. And or person, and let's use the right pronoun, eh? Or person.
Thank you, Johan.
So anyway, so you know, and it worries me that this was done in a hurry.
Mm.
That shows a certain dereliction on the part of the consumer as well.
Mm.
You don't do things like this in a hurry. You inspect the car, or have the car inspected, or take somebody with you that knows something about motor vehicles, and have a look. And you also, you know, you research the dealership. You find out from friends who have had business with this dealership. What kind of dealership are you dealing with? Are you dealing with the type that poor Ricky has landed up with, or are you dealing with people who are reputable?
So, in essence, Ricky is able to go back with that agreement to say, within my 6 months warranty, and these are the options I'd like available. Options I'd like to select from what's available to me.
You see, Ricky is fortunate that the Act protects him, and it is the Consumer Protection Act. It's not the Service Providers Protection Act.
I've got you. I've got you completely.
He is protected by the Act, and he can carry out those three options. And if he doesn't, he can contact my office.
Okay.
Or our website.
Would you say, if I was Ricky, I would go to a DECRA or another organization that would do an impartial full assessment on the car? It will cost a few hundred rand, but worth it. And then you can go back to the dealership with proof of what's wrong with the car. And on those basis, because if he goes back, it just says it's a funny noise, and I think it's been an accident without any proof. It doesn't carry much weight. So unfortunately, I think, Ricky, you've got a little bit of money to spend first, and then let us know how you go. We can take it further if you're still getting there. We don't care. Respond.
Yeah, I think that's good advice, because you know the thing is also what worries me is the way that this transaction took place, the speed with which it took place. It means that the consumer never looked at the documents he signed. He signed it, took the car, and left without even test driving the car. So the best now is to take it, like Wendy says, to a DECRA inspection center and have the car inspected for a few rand, and take the report, and then take the vehicle back, because then at least he's got legs to stand on, you know.
All the best with that one, Ricky. Let's quickly go to Mike in Randburg. Mike, you were in a similar situation with a dealership that sold your car to someone else.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. And I'm glad that the gents from the Ombudsman is there. And he answered earlier saying that in those cases, we can bring it to the Ombudsman. But I took it to the Ombudsman, and they rejected my case, saying that I had no recourse. I bought a vehicle in Centurion. I'm not going to name the dealership unless if I can.
I'd rather not at this point.
Yeah, rather not.
Okay. And we went through a certain bank. We signed all the documents. I traded in a vehicle that they had offered me to trade in, that they can give me a good deal if I trade in my vehicle. We went through the documents. We signed the documents. I collected the vehicle. The only thing that was left was for them to receive payment from the bank. I subsequently said to the bank, hold on with the payment, because this vehicle has got some damages on it, and I need the dealership to address it before they get paid for it. When I took it in, they gave me a hard time, but eventually they agreed that they would fix it. While it was there, they raised the issue that they had misquoted me. And I said, okay, guys, unfortunately, at this point, it's not my problem, because you gave me a certain offer. Now, we ended up sitting with the mother body of that brand of vehicle, and then we came to a conclusion that they will cover the dealership of a certain amount, that the shortfall, and they should give me back the vehicle Okay. On the next day, when after the meeting, they reported that now they had sold the vehicle contrary to what they said in the meeting the day before. Okay. So now, how do you sell a vehicle that has already been paid for, that has already been signed for, and all the documentation is done, and you knowingly sell that vehicle? Now, here's where it gets worse. Besides the ombudsman part that I mentioned, that I went and reported it, but the bank itself, that particular bank, released that vehicle and had it deregistered from the traffic department, but basically consented to it being sold to somebody else. Okay. And when you go back to the system and say, where are the records for this particular transaction? The signed documents from the bank side, including the electronic signed documents, are not there anymore. Okay. Mm. So what in good heavens has taken place for all those things not to be there when they were there in the first place? And as a result of that, I lost opportunities to income, you know, and all types of things, because I did not have a vehicle since that time.
Johan, on an issue like this, when the ombuds has already responded to saying there's nothing we can do, how can Mike handle this, or is it something he has to let go?
Okay, you know what? At this point in time, I cannot really respond to that because I need a case number. I have to go and see exactly what happened in that particular case and why our case manager came to that decision. But on the face of it, you know, the vehicle doesn't belong to you until you've paid for it. And if a bank hasn't released the money yet, then the vehicle it still belongs to the dealership. So, you know, the consumer in this particular case instructed the bank not to release the money.
Mm.
So, you know, so now you're sitting with a bit of a conundrum here, because now what does the dealership do? You know, you can't release the car, you can't do anything about the car, you know, and the bank hasn't paid it. And until the money is released to the dealership, the vehicle still belongs to the dealership, and he can do with it whatever he likes. But unfortunately, I cannot give you a proper answer on this particular case, because I'll have to go and study the case. And have a look at it and see what happened there and why the case manager came to that conclusion.
Okay, thank you so much, Mike, for your call. Johan, what is your website? How can people get in touch with the Motor Industry Ombudsman?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our website, which is www.miosa. miosa@miosa.co.za.
Thank you.
www.miosa.co.za.
Miosa for Motor Industry Ombudsman. Yes. Thank you so much, Johan, for chatting to us and for staying for the entire conversation. We didn't even get a chance to jump onto other issues, but what we'll do, all of you that were holding, we'll take your details and pick it up next week.